This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
An old friend is back with us today for the umpteenth time. Linda Moulton Howe was appearing on Art Bell and Dreamland. We, I think, started about the same time in the late mid to late 90s together. And she really does need literally no introduction. However, before we even start, if you do not watch her YouTube show on Wednesdays at, is it 6 p.m. Mountain Time, Linda?
It begins in Albuquerque, Mountain Time, 7:30 p.m. live for an hour.
Okay, 7:30 Mountain Time, and figure that out in your own time zone. There are 70,000 listeners to this show, and I'll bet you a lot of you do not tune in to Linda's show. Linda gets a lot more. She gets pushing 150,000 viewers. So I would say it could be more interesting than Dreamland. Maybe so. Anyway, you will meet Linda. You will meet her two wonderful cats, and you will have a marvelous time because she does know whereof she speaks. And that is what I'm going to be talking about today with Linda. I'm going to start out with a general question about whistleblowers, because we're going to be talking about a truly extraordinary whistleblower that appeared just this week. We heard an actual recording of him, yes, this week on the Earth Files YouTube channel broadcast. So let's first start, since I know a lot of people who work on the inside that I can't talk about, that I promise not to, and that's fine. It's up to them after all, and they have their legal obligations that have to be respected. You get these fabulously cool whistleblowers, Linda. How has that come to be?
Well, I think it started with Spartan 1 and 2 in my Antarctica documentary in a bigger way than it ever had before. I have always gotten legitimate whistleblowers, maybe real, two or three a year up until I did the Antarctica documentary. And the bottom line is people who are in DIA, NSA, NRO, all of the intel operations, and then in counter-intel, they know when they are listening to material that they know is true. And they will not give me permission to interview them. But they will send me information. Or there will be somebody who said, if I can talk with you, I can give you an insight on Y or Z. And those are the kinds of emails that have started coming more heavily than ever in my professional career since I released Antarctica, Alien Secrets Beneath the Ice, at what was about in Vimeo and Amazon in the end of December, so about 6 months ago. And in these 6 months, if you saw all of the communications that I have received, of which I have only used a half a dozen, it is as if I am being given insights into reality that you and I and Jacques Vallée and others have tried to get to hard facts and people who would be willing to go on the record, because we know there is a pattern of information that relates to competing extraterrestrial civilizations in which one of their main preoccupations is genetic manipulation on this planet. And that doesn't mean we have all the answers, but that is a big picture, and it has been going on for millions of years. A DIA whistleblower in 1999 told me our government had proof of three competing extraterrestrial civilizations manipulating and terraforming this planet for at least 270 million years, and gave me some insight about the knowledge that he had. But when I said, what is the government's proof? He said, I can't tell you. If I did, it would be dangerous for you and for me.
That is correct.
And I have always, yeah, okay. So now you may be able to answer an insight, but coming to Wednesday's show, it is almost a classic of all of the things that can happen when you are trying to, as a journalist, looking for facts and insights into real truth when we're living on a planet that is so concocted and the policies of lies and denials exist in all countries in bigger number than the facts. And that comes down to this. I've been exposed to so much that when somebody sends me a proton mail or an email, or I get a lot of, we'll say, first handshakes through hard U.S. mail or sometimes FedEx, and I see patterns of information, and I have now sort of developed a sixth or seventh sense about whether I'm dealing with information that it seems that it is actually contributing to something I already know from somebody else, but that this is going further. And in this particular case, I received a simple email from Edward Keith Abbott and said, I have served in the military. I know about aliens. Call me. That was it. And when I called that number and he answered, and I asked him a few opening questions, and the first one was, would you please send me your DD-214? Please send me photos of you in military. There's a series of questions that I always ask. Sometimes right there, you filter out the phony ones because they don't have a DD-214, or if they're unwilling to send it, I'm always suspicious.
Oh, yeah.
And people say, well, what is a DD-214? Well, it is absolutely mandatory in any square one of journalism. If you are going to do any kind of an interview with somebody who says that they have been in any branch of the United States military at any point, that they should be able to provide the D, it's D as in dog, 214, and it is a summary, like a timeline summary, of when they entered the service, when they got out of the service, some DD-214s, depending upon whether the person was in a lot of classified programs or not. It may detail bases where the person has been. It will usually give the awards if a person has received awards. It will definitely show whether it was an honorable or dishonorable discharge. It's sort of a basic, if you don't have one and you're not prepared to give it to a reporter, then you're not real. And I would not deal with a military person who did not get me their DD-214. I have that information from the Spartans and from Edward Abbott and from everybody who has been in the military that I've ever interviewed and put on Earth Files or on Coast to Coast or Dreamland or any of the work that I've done. Now, so let's go to Edward Keith Abbott is the full three-name name on the DD-214 with his Social Security number, which I always Photoshop out.
Yeah, of course.
Social Security number, I always Photoshop out any of the addresses that are still related to the person's current life. And because he is still in the same area that he was when he entered the military, and where he was born, and where he grew up, and where his family and relatives are, I Photoshopped out that. Everything else is there. He also sent me photographs of many of the awards. He had about a dozen awards for various achievements, and he sent me photos of those. That's for openers. So now I say, let's set a time and let's do a recorded interview. And we started last Saturday, 17, 16, 15, that was the 13th of June, and with the idea that we would go into his own eyewitness sighting with his son of a very, very strange UFO. When he sent me the photos, and we can get into controversy about whether those photos have been distributed by others in the world, but let's stick with Eddie's story right now. He and his son in the EVA, it's spelled on a map, EWA, beach in Hawaii, because he was in the S3 of the Schofield Barracks, working in intelligence analysis at Schofield and the famous Kunia Tunnel operation, which goes inside and branches out inside of a hill in Hawaii that was first built. One of the tunnels was built in World War II to hide from any flyover airplanes. And then it has grown through the years. And it is Kunia Tunnel that Edward Snowden was releasing information about when he got a lot of the documents having to do with communication secrets. A lot of that came from what people were doing in the Schofield Barracks Kunia Tunnel area in Hawaii, which is where Snowden was based. So with Edward Snowden is one time frame. World War II is another time frame. You come to Edward Keith Abbott, and it was. He was 34 years old by 2006. He had had jobs in a number of various professions, had been through a couple of marriages, a couple of kids. Then there was some kind of a major implosion involved with his family life. And probably a lot of listeners can relate to moments in your life where you feel like you have lost everything. And he said it was one of those spontaneous, knee-jerk reactions. He was just going to join the military because he had always kept himself up physically and strong. And he went down to an Army recruiting office, and they asked him to do some tests. And they told him that they thought he had an aptitude for something that they wanted somebody to do work in, and he ended up going to Fort Leonard Campbell in Kentucky. That's where he did basic, and that is where his photograph, where he has facial hair around his jaw, that some people say, oh, he could never have been in the military with a beard like that. Well, there are a lot of military people who, depending upon which part of their military service and in which base, yes,
you're right,
they can have facial hair.
And yeah, I can assure you that this is true of people in military intelligence, for example,
yes, exactly,
which is the area he was in.
That's right. Exactly.
They tend to look as off base as they can.
They counter intel and intel want the people working as analysts to be able to fit in any population they want to send.
Exactly.
Them. Yeah. So now the next assignment out of Fort Leonard is Fort Huachuca in Arizona.
And see, that's a tip off. But tell us a little bit, Linda, about Fort Huachuca, because of why you think that's a significant move assignment.
Because in my career, for going all the way back to 1979, when I started working on A Strange Harvest about animal mutilations, not understanding much about how intel and counter-intel worked, but sure, having a compressed education in the process of working on that film and everything that has happened since, and having I'll give you one of the best clear just Fort Huachuca stories coming from somebody that I knew. They worked at Martin Marietta. They knew the man who went to Fort Huachuca from Martin Marietta with a briefcase padlocked to his right wrist. And that the Martin Marietta people knew that he got to the meeting, it was ET related stuff. He had the briefcase taken off of his wrist. He went through the meeting. He left the meeting. And the next thing that they got was a call from somebody who had found a man dead. And it was the man who left Mark Marietta in the Denver region, went to Fort Huachuca on an ET-related matters with these documents padlocked to his wrist and was found dead within hours of attending this meeting. And that when I was told this by people that I knew, trusted, they were helping me on other areas of UFO research that I was doing in Colorado. And they said that this was not the first time, exact MO, that whatever was going on at Fort Huachuca, they knew involved alien presences in vast underground places, which is exactly what Eddie Abbott was exposed to during his time at Fort Huachuca. And it is what he was told at Fort Huachuca that I am going to go into on my next Wednesday, June 24th, my Earth Files YouTube channel. It's fascinating. It's the same type of information, and it's all these many years later. But Fort Huachuca is where I have had descriptions of some, like, directly linked to UFO and ET level at CIA, NSI, DIA levels, where one of the places that the material is hidden, documents are hidden, the underground facilities at Fort Huachuca is in one of these top lists, along with Area 51, China Lake, and Wright-Patterson, and you could probably name some others. So Fort Huachuca, as the next place coming out of Fort Leonard, where they wanted him to work in intel as an intel analyst, was revealing, because that's where he was told all of this straightforward stuff about UFOs and ETs that he had not heard before he got to Fort Huachuca. And then his next assignment, starting in 2007, was to Schofield Barracks in Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
And that,
which incidentally connect, that is, there are underwater things that's directly involved with as well, I understand.
The photos that he and his son, he had an old flip iPhone. Remember, this was 2007, and there were a couple of still these where the you flipped it open, completely different from iPhones. If this was not an iPhone, this was an old flip phone. And he and his son were outside when they both saw this object moving in the sky. And he said when he brought up his flip phone to try to take photos, because he'd never seen anything like it, he said it looked like a bat. First he thought, what in the world? It's a huge bat flying right in the daylight sky. And he said he started trying to take photos, and it was like the phone camera inside of it was fighting him. And he couldn't understand why. And he only got three successful images out of trying to take multiple ones, but those three, he and his son both talked. They'd never seen anything like it before, And he already had the context for UFOs and ETs. So he went into his house and he transferred from his flip iPhone into his home computer the photos before he went back to Schofield Barracks, not expecting anything at that point. He just did that as a matter of he was getting used to backing up a lot of things that he was doing. And when he went to work, he was so innocent of mind. When you talk with him, the first interview was 2 hours long. We're going to do another. That'll probably be another 2 hours. He's quite consistent. You don't find contradictions over 2 hours with this guy. He's more likely to say a tremendous amount of detail that really does seem to affirm that this guy is describing everything that he has seen, the interactions with people. So when he says he gets back to work, he just said to one of his fellow workers, "Hey, did you see this? Have you seen anything like this?" And showed this photo on his phone. And the next thing that happened.
Now, is that the photo that's now up on your site?
No, I don't have not. Well, at my Earth Files broadcast, you can see it in the live stream.
Oh, yeah, in the live stream. That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
I'm going to do earthfiles.com. By Sunday, it will be a whole report with the photos, all of the interview, everything will be up by Sunday. And so what I'm telling you now is from what we did in the live stream on Wednesday, June 17th.
Right.
And this is really important. As he said, when you go from Fort Huachuca, where they talked about UFOs, ETs, animal mutilations, hybrids, human abductions, and then I am in Schofield Barracks in Hawaii and also being introduced to the Kunia Tunnel, and I am in the context that whatever I am saying to these people is not for the public, that everybody signed NDAs. They may only be 10-year-old NDAs. They may be 25 years. They may be 35. They may be for life. There's all kinds of terms on NDAs. And he said, but you get used to the psychological climate that everybody that you're working with in the section in the office that you're in, and they talk about UFOs and ETs all of the time. He said, it never occurred to me that I shouldn't be able to show what I had on my flip phone and ask, has anybody seen this? What it led to was the CO, the commanding officer, was very upset and called for Eddie Abbott to go to his office, demanded the phone. Seemed very angry that Eddie Abbott would have not known that he should not be taking photographs of UFOs in the sky, takes the phone, takes out what was a card then in those old flip phones, and hands the phone back to Eddie and dismisses him. And Eddie Abbott was always confused about why would the commanding officer get so angry about his taking three photos of an object in the sky that he said, shouldn't we all know about what this is? And I can see his point of view. He's supposed to be on the inside. He's supposed to be in the group. They're already talking about UFOs and ETs. Why would he be singled out on that particular moment about that particular object on those three images on that phone? He still does not have an answer to that to this day. But now we get to one of the confusions. That was in 2007, and he was there 2008 into 2009, and then he was in a terrible accident. And it disabled him badly for a while, and he was retired from the Army in 2009 after only 2+ years. He would have gone on longer, except that he was hospitalized. He's had to have surgery. Later on, he had to have surgery for 5 bypasses. He does not have a strong heart system, and that is part of the reason he said he reached out to me, because he does not feel that he's going to have a long life, and he wanted to tell some of this. Okay, the first email that he sent me was actually November 6th, 2015. He took the photos in 2007, so 8 years. And when he sent the photos and photos of him in his Army gear with one or two of his children, a whole series, I think 11 images, it's in my email. In November of 2015, when all of us were able to get on airlines then, and I was doing between last year and going back 5 or 6 years, I was on dozens of airplanes every single year, doing conferences and TV productions and all sorts of things. And I confess, trying to keep up with my email has been a huge challenge.
I know the feeling, Linda. Believe me.
Yeah. Yeah, the black river that builds up.
Oh, and, God. You know, when I open my email, my private email, every morning, there are usually about 80 emails in the private email.
Well, and mine, I'm sure you've mine got, is just all mixed, and it averages 400 a day,
I'm
which
not
is
surprised.
2,800 a week.
And you have to, you can't not look at them, because they may be gold.
Yeah. That does not mean that pre-COVID that I always got through all of my emails. And in fact, there are chunks of time, depending upon what I was doing. And back in November of 2015, I had done a search because Edward Abbott had told me back in November of 2015, I sent you and Nick Pope my only first email with the photos. And I said, you did? And I did a search. And here it was, black, one of the many black ones sitting in November of 2015 that I had never opened or seen. And that, so these many, now in 2020, is when I saw last weekend for the very first time the first email with the images sent to me by Edward Keith Abbott. And he said he didn't hear from me. He didn't hear from Nick. He didn't. Whoever he sent else, he never heard from anybody.
I hope he didn't hear. He didn't send to me, but he may have.
Well, I totally get this picture, because this has happened repeatedly, where somebody will call or email in the current time and say, you know, I've tried to reach you, and you go back and you're embarrassed that you haven't opened up all your emails, but it is an overwhelming task.
Yes.
And in this case, the fact that it was black, unopened, sitting in my November 6, 2015 emails with all of these photos attached with his family and everything was almost reinforcing this guy is legitimate, and he is wanting somebody to tell him, do you recognize this type of craft? Why is it so sensitive? And he is the one who said about a week around that very time,
Linda,
that he emailed.
We've got to take a brief break for our Free Dreamlanders. Free Dreamlanders, right. You're listening to a very special thing, which is a conversation between Whitley Strieber and Linda Moulton Howe. We have been doing this a long time. We know each other really, really well. And you don't find this. You're not going to find this anywhere else. We'll be right back. One reason to join UnknownCountry.com is the fact that you get Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, Majestic, and Superstorm audiobooks. Another reason, all of the subscriber interviews all the way back to the beginning, and some of them are totally remarkable. All of our contactee interviews that Ann Strever did, deeply fascinating material. What is it really like to be inside this experience? If you're in it, you can learn more and more. And if you're not, then you can explore more and more. There is so much here. Join unknowncountry.com today. Which means stop what you're doing, pause the show, go to unknowncountry.com, join now. Do it. We love you, and we'd really love you if you did it.
For all of Whitley's available books, visit the new unknowncountry.com store. Just click on the store tab on Unknown Country's masthead, and you'll find a treasury of Whitley Strieber books, including classics like the Communion series, War Day and Majestic, and the eerily prophetic early novel Night Church, plus A New World, Afterlife Revolution, and all the latest. Visit the store now and join the adventure.
We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe, her website, earthfiles.com, where you can keep up with all the latest news. And it is extraordinary and unusual news, to say the least. And, of course, her weekly show on YouTube is so good. It's starting at 7:30 Mountain Time, Wednesday nights for an hour. It's live, and don't miss it. And get to know her cats, too, whom she loves dearly and who look like they deserve that. Okay, now let's get back to, and I want to just shift.
Let me just finish up.
Yeah, go ahead and finish
up. Because this is really important. When Eddie Abbott sent me the first email, November 6th, 2015, with all of these images of the strange UFO and his family and so forth. Within a week of that time, there was a story, I believe it was in the Midwest, I think Kentucky, of a father and a son who were out in the Midwest U.S. and that they took photos of something that looked like his photos. And he sent me in that first email in 2015 that I didn't know about, one of the photos that were depicted in a news article in the Express in England, based on a U.S. story, saying, this is what my son and I photographed through my flip phone in Hawaii in 2007. When you put the pieces together,
That's very telling, Linda. Very important.
Yeah, exactly. It begins to track that. Where some people are saying, oh, he's just taken other photos and put them out and it's a scam and all of that. No, it is not. And if you go back and take the time to study the events and the dates as they unfolded, you can see this pattern emerging. And that what has happened between 2000 and the 7 period when he was at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii and today, not only did he have this terrible injury in Hawaii, in the last 4 or 5 years, I can't remember what year now, he was front-ended by a car when he was in some kind of a recreational vehicle. And he ended up in the hospital. So his body has really been through the ringer. And he did have to have surgery and had to have 5 bypasses. And when we talked last weekend, it was not in a sad way. It was somebody who is just coming to terms that he's in midlife. He does not think that he's going to have a long life. He said, I have listened to you, and I want you to know what it is that I learned at Fort Huachuca and at Schofield Barracks in the Kenia Tunnel. And now, it's not like he's doing anything for vindication or anything, and that answers your question at the beginning. Some whistleblowers are in that category.
Right.
They either retired because of physical disability. That happens a lot. Or they just have reached a point where, older than Eddie, they feel like they want to pass the baton on subjects that they have heard me report about.
It reminds me of Jesse Marcel and also of General Exon.
Yeah, exactly. They want somebody who they think has context to receive the information and report about it. And that has been increasing. So the number of people with quality information and with either documents, illustrations, or whatever it is to back it up. Sometimes I can show publicly and sometimes I can't. But I feel that we are truly at this revolutionary point, Whitley, that you and I and Jacques and so many people have always wanted us to finally get to. And that's what Eddie said. Why shouldn't this whole planet know everything that is in these tunnels and underground and on the moon and Mars?
Well, you know, I know what the visitors tell me, why not. And it is that they do not want to engage in cultural colonization. They feel that as soon as they come out or are revealed, the entire world will just stop its own exploration of reality and concentrate on trying to learn from them. And that's not what they're here for. Now, that's what they've said to me, but there may be many other reasons. But I will say this, I know quite certainly that the secrecy starts with them. And, you know, there's nothing else I can say about it. And I'm always glad when I hear people who come forward like this, because this does have the ring of truth to it. I always wonder, you know, whether or not it's a plant. In other words, is this a plant from military intelligence? And as soon as I saw the shape of that craft, I thought to myself, that looks like a winged device. It looks like something that flies. Could this be some kind of attempt to conceal or to make it seem to someone, maybe even foreign powers who watch your program, as I'm sure they do, that a classified or secret U.S. aircraft is actually an alien craft? You know, you right. just wonder. My mind goes down those paths endlessly because I've been doing this for so long. I know yours does too.
Yeah, and it is very clear that the shape of this was to camouflage as a large bird.
Yeah, but why? I mean, who
so
would believe
it? Where
do they get off? I mean, it's about the most obtrusive bird. I mean, you see a bird like that anywhere in the sky, anywhere in the world, and you're definitely going to be extremely concerned. It's not camouflage. It's an attention getter. Do they just not know that?
Well, it certainly startled Eddie Abbott and his son.
Of course it did.
It startled the father and son in the United States. The fact that these people were able to get photographs at approximately the same time is interesting. And I think that it's fair to say that since that 2015 Express News item, that some people have confused that Eddie Abbott and the Kentucky are one and the same, and they're not. It's that the device itself is what is so strange and is common to both of those experiences. I don't think that I have ever seen any photo of an object like that except for the photos that Eddie Abbott sent me. Have you ever seen that before?
Linda, I've seen it somewhere. I can't remember where, unfortunately. I've been trying to ever since I first saw it on your show. And if I ever do remember, I will tell Linda and I will tell you. But I've seen it and it looked extremely familiar to me. That's all I can say about it. And then I thought, well, where have you seen it? And I could not answer that question. It's very strange. It's interesting you even asked.
Yeah. Well,
how about you?
I had never seen it before looking at Edward Abbott's photos from 2015 last weekend for the first time. And I could see, though, that there is one frame that is the best frame, the whiter ones farther apart do look like sort of like a large black bird. But when the one that he's got the camera right under it, it appears to have some sort of a metallic surface. It has reflection points. It appears to have what you call 90-degree angles, which you normally don't see 90-degree angles in things of nature. And so it comes across in that one clear image as something constructed, metallic in reflection, black. We don't have a lot of things that are black except those that we use in intelligence for overflights. The black is not something that is out in the, we'll call it the public world. It's in military, I guess you'd say, craft that they're designed to fly high and take photographs of every part of the world. And this kind of reminded me of that, that it's black and has that feeling of the bird, whoever made it, E.T. or somebody else on this planet. It is very bizarre. And the fact that it is not common, that is absolutely, I think, is fair to say. Nobody is rushing forward with a whole bunch of photos that they have taken of a shape like that.
No, they are not. It's an interesting case, very, very interesting case. And, you know, as usual, you've got a really fascinating take on it, Linda. So, and the case, the story goes on, folks, believe
yes.
me.
Yes, there will be more on Wednesday, June 24th. Tune in. It really is going to be interesting. I can say that to you now.
Okay, we're going to move on now. But before we do move on, we're going to take our 45-minute break a little early so that we can just talk. And Free Dreamlanders, if you actually signed up, there would be no breaks. And that would be just peachy as far as I'm concerned. So go to unknowncountry.com and sign up now. And don't miss Linda Moulton Howe's weekly YouTube program. It's great. And earthfiles.com is required reading if you are a Dreamlander or an Unknown Country reader. We'll be right back.
Unknown Country and Dreamland are unique in every way. The site offers over 16,000 news stories dating back 20 years, all of them with our uniquely open-minded and yet carefully researched point of view. You can find stories of everything from lost cities to multiple witness high strangeness events to the cutting edge of science and reality on the site. For subscribers, the site offers a wealth of material that is mind-opening and can be life-changing. Plus, there are active comment sections, both in the free area and the subscriber area, and a free weekly newsletter. Dreamland, which Whitley Strieber has been hosting for over 20 years, is archived on the site back to 2004. This archive is the only one of its kind in the world, an incredible richness of information that offers exciting adventure every time you dig in. So go to unknowncountry.com daily, get our newsletter, participate in the site's social groups, and above all, subscribe and join this unique community today. Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab to see our options.
The Afterlife Revolution is getting great reviews. There's a tremendous, lovely response to it, and I'm so pleased and humbled because it's an effort on the part of myself and Anne. And I love Anne so much. I want her to succeed in this incredible task that she has undertaken of returning and communicating across the bridge between the worlds. And she's really doing it. This is a real thing that's happening. Listen to some of these reviews. Anne and Whitley Strieber lay out their life's work in the most exquisitely beautiful manner. This moving book comes from the heart, the unified heart of two people who have dedicated their lives in this realm and the next to revealing the nature of consciousness as it makes its sojourn in this human form. That's just one. Here's another. I love this book. It's a wonderful read, especially if you lost somebody very close to you. Just incredible. Here's another one. The book shows you how to grow your soul, for lack of a better term. Through Anne's insight, Whitley shares invaluable information that could only be from the other side. So take it seriously. Go to Amazon and get Afterlife Revolution. Go on to Amazon and get the Afterlife Revolution in paperback or in Kindle format. And if you have questions or thoughts, write me at whitley@striever.com. I'm right here. I'm ready to answer anything you ask to help you in any way I can, always. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe, her website, earthfiles.com, her weekly YouTube show, 7:30 Mountain Time, Wednesdays on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and input Earth Files in the search terms. You will find it immediately. And there are also lots of older shows on that channel, and there is not one that isn't fabulous. So dig in. Just dig in. Now, Linda, one of the things that interests me, and this is a flyer. I have not asked Linda about this off the air, is that I've known for many years that there is something in a trench off of San Diego, about 70 miles west of San Diego, California. And when I saw the Tic Tac videos that were all taken from that area, I was fairly amazed because I had always been told this by various people, and you never know what to believe or not believe. So it really, and then suddenly here were these objects going in and out of the water right in that immediate area. And I thought, well, maybe it's true. And I'm asking you what you know, if anything, about that.
Well, one detail that we didn't discuss from Hawaii and Eddie Abbott is that he saw the Blackhawks, two Blackhawks helicopters, suddenly come roaring to where this sort of butterfly-winged, large black object was that he and his son were watching. And he said it just went, this is his expression, that it was gone from overhead, out going toward Diamond Head way far, and the Blackhawks were coming roaring after it. It was very clear the Blackhawks were aimed for this black object that he had photographed. And he and his son saw it go down into the water. And to then underscore the importance of whatever this object was, those Blackhawks did a circle operation with other helicopters that came in all night long. Eddie Abbott said that he sat out smoking cigarettes, just watching, wondering, what in the world is that black winged object? Why is it so important? What is it that they are expecting that they would find by an all-night operation in Hawaii after what he had seen? And this was before his experience with that commanding officer demanding that he hand over his flip phone so that the commander could take out the card that had the photos on it. So with that as background, the idea that UFOs go into the oceans as easily as they flip around the skies is well established. And when you come to the release of David Fravor was the jet pilot in the first release, December 16th, 2017, in the New York Times and Politico and the Washington Post, talking about how he had been in getting ready. They were going to the Middle East, and they were in operations. It was south of San Diego. It was off the coast of Baja and Mexico. And that he had run in infrared video on an object that depending upon whether they're in the white or the black mode, it's called hot or cold. The best video that was released, you're seeing this sometimes a black object in one form and a white object, and it's doing strange maneuvers. And I did an interview for 2 hours with David Fravor only a couple of months after the release in the New York Times. And that was for Phenomenon Radio when John Burroughs and I were doing that. And in that, I'll never forget that this calm, stable-sounding pilot who is recounting what they saw, why they considered it to be an unidentified aerial phenomena or UFO, what he said, there is no human pilot who could survive what I was watching happening at the speeds that it was happening, including the object stopping from moving at 5,000 miles an hour to going in 90-degree turns. He said that is not possible for human pilots. And
no.
That was from a 17-year-long jet pilot, David Fravor.
Well, it isn't possible. In fact, though, it has been tried, and what was tried was the building of a counterforce suit. A craft existed, I don't know if it still does, for a while, that could make not 90-degree turns, but extremely sharp turns. The result was that these suits could not be made to work, and these guys ended up with shattered hips. And that's all I know about it. I don't know whether the program moved forward or not. But we could not do that 20 years ago, and I don't think we can do it now either, unless, and if this is true and it's being held secret, we have anti-gravity, then that is evil, and there's nothing, as far as I am concerned and know, from the visitors that would prevent that from being made public if we have it. In fact, very much the contrary. If we have that, that's a big stepping stone, and it should certainly be in the public trust, not held secret for military reasons. So.
Right. And remember the Dragonfly drone, 2007, 2008.
Vividly, I never will forget those.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And Isaac was the source.
Folks,
That's what he calls himself.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, the Dragonfly drones, it's surprisingly long ago, Linda. Go to earthfiles.com, and would they just search on Dragonfly drones to find them?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I did dozens of reports.
Dozens,
with photographs,
exactly.
With illustrations, MP3 audio interviews. It was a big investigation.
And you know, I saw the first one, I had exactly the same reaction that I had to that picture that we were just talking about a few minutes ago. I thought, that's so familiar. I've seen that before, but I have no direct memory of it. But go ahead.
I remember that it was like some cold water went through me the first time I saw one of those. Like, this is real.
Yes.
This is not human. And I just knew and spent, 2, 3, 4 years doing so much on the Dragonfly drones. And the man who was releasing a document that became very important in that investigation called himself Isaac and said that he had worked for 4 years in the 1980s, basically underground in a facility that was camouflaged on top as looking like a library with a lot of trees, a sidewalk, very humble, quiet, completely the opposite of doing extraterrestrial research, back engineering and technological development. But where all that was happening was down underground in what I understand now in 2020 from several other sources. There is a huge underground complex that involves some of the United States' most major corporations, Xerox. There's Xerox Park, that whole operation. If we knew the truth of what has been built and going on underground, and that's exactly where Isaac said that he had worked underground. And he broke out pages from what he admitted was a document that he secreted out in his pants. And he had photographs of what were described as extraterrestrial technologies. It was in a CARAT program, commercial application research extraterrestrial technology, CARET. And in that, in the document that he released to me and some others, and that I was able to talk with him and get even further background with, they broke down extraterrestrial technology into these three categories: neutralizing gravity from a point source to the size of a pyramid. Nobody thought that was possible. It was incomprehensible. They had invisibility, could generate an invisibility around themselves or any matter to the point that the human eye and mind would never, ever could be 6 feet from you and be completely invisible. The third, a variation on the invisible, was holographic projection. Because if the ETs wanted to project a saguaro cactus in Tucson, only it was an upload, download, very sophisticated technology going to another star system, they could project a hologram. It would then be matter, quote unquote, to the human mind and eye. But it would not be matter. It would never disintegrate. And they could sustain it for as long as they wanted. Those three categories were related to the dragonfly technology and neutralizing gravity, being able to do point source all the way down to something like an eighth of an inch up to the size of a pyramid, that this was how they built their craft, that the craft were put together with gravitational issues, right, having nothing to do. There weren't joints, sealers, bolts, wires, nothing.
And I have in this office, and you had, until you had the good luck to be offered $35,000 for by DTSA, a small piece of material that...
Bismuth magnesium zinc.
The magnesium zinc layered material, which as the... electron micrographs show that I posted on my website, there is nothing holding them together. Nothing holding
right.
the layers
That's right.
together. And
That's right. It is atom by atom.
Right. Exactly. Now, here's another thing that's fascinating that I have reason to believe is true. These things can be built instantaneously. It's not a short process. It is literally instantaneous. Isn't that fascinating? I wonder if it's true.
Well, you remember William Mills Tompkins, who passed last year at 94 or 95. I've lost track of how old he was when he died, but I interviewed him when he was 93 years old for 5 hours. He was smart as a whip. He never lost track. His mind was ever present. And he worked with Bob Wood, who worked at McDonnell Douglas for 30-some years in aerospace as an engineer. And Bob Wood took William Mills Tompkins very seriously about Tompkins having a role in the United States Navy from World War II on, because when he was sort of appropriated in his teenage years, it was because he had an extraordinary ability to just look at an airplane or a Navy ship or something that was mechanical or machine-like and be able in scale drawing to reproduce what he was looking at to the point that it became an issue for the U.S. Navy. They said that his illustrations and 3D creations were compromising national security because they were so accurate. And that was why the U.S. Navy talked with his parents and said, we need him. We need him in our war effort in World War II. And that William Mills Tompkins, in his 90s, picks up the story in two books that he did. What was the introduction? extraterrestrials picked me or something like that. And that he describes how the Navy then gives him photographs of UFOs to recreate in the scale models, just like he had of ships and planes. And that as he began to continue to work for the Navy, he became aware that that the ETs were building on the moon, that they had all kinds of structures on the backside of the moon. It's all written about in these books that here, extraterrestrials. It's Selected by Extraterrestrials, Volumes 1 and 2 by William Mills Tompkins. And that in the photos and the intel that they had on what the alien presence was doing on the backside of the moon, that this was one of the sentences that was underscored in Volume 2. They were building so rapidly that the backside of the moon could change depending upon the orbit of whatever we might have when we went there in Apollo. That things were building, there'd be constructions that would take place within a day or two.
Yes.
That's in the book.
That's right. And that is, I'm sure, quite true. There's also another level to it, though, and that is that they can be turned off, in other words, made invisible in an instant too, which leaves us in a situation where we could easily photograph the backside of the moon and not see a thing there when it was actually covered with structures. So here we are.
You're making a very, very important point.
Yes.
I think that has been part of the history, both on the Earth, on Mars, on moon, that we are dealing with that ability to use holograms and invisibility to completely baffle the minds of other
right.
intelligences
and it's
that
why
they're working among.
It's why those drones appeared and then were gone, but they're not gone at all. They're not gone. They didn't go away. They're still here, and they're still doing what they did. The drones.
But why did they allow themselves to be seen in December and January doing those grid patterns at all in the first place?
Well, Linda, there are only two possible reasons. Either something happened that caused them to appear that they was not expected, or they did it on purpose. You know, my wife Anne used to say that we need to understand this as a theatrical event, and that it is intended to very gradually get us to the point where we take it for granted, so that this whole issue of cultural colonization will die away. And when they do emerge, it will come to seem perfectly natural to us. It will feel like they have always been part of our world and we part of theirs. And we will not feel like they are somewhere above us and that we need to completely stop our own journey through reality and exploration of reality on our own in order to concentrate on them. And it's a slow process because it's not something that only has to do with the intellect. It has to do with deep archetypes inside the human species that have to change and slowly become aware of the fact that we live in a very much greater world than we realize or see, and that we deserve a place in it and are ready 100%, every single one of us, to take that place. Now, free Dreamlanders, we're going to say goodbye. And we're going to say goodbye because we have to talk about some really cool, really secret stuff regarding the Antarctic. And we are going to do that just with subscribers in the blatantly frank hope that this will tempt you into at last putting your money where your ears are and joining unknowncountry.com. Subscribers, we're going to keep right on keeping on with Linda Moulton Howe. Don't miss Linda Moulton Howe's fabulous website or her great weekly show Wednesday nights at 7:30 Mountain Time on YouTube, the Earth Files channel on YouTube.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.